This is the Ingles Information Aisle with Leah McGrath, helping you eat healthy, feel great, and understand your nutrition. Now, here's your host, Ingles dietitian Leah McGrath.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome to the Ingles Information Aisle. This is Leah McGrath, your Ingles dietitian, and joining me today, I have a return guest. It's always a pleasure to talk to Dr. Kevin Folta, and he is one of my favorite people to follow on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, follow Kevin Folta on Twitter. He also has a really great podcast. And Kevin, Talking Biotech is the podcast, right?
That's right, yes. TalkingBiotechPodcast.com, but also on iTunes and any place else where you consume your media.
Yeah. I've listened to a number, at least a couple of the shows on there. It's been really, there's a lot of great information. If you are interested in the realm of science, health, agriculture, you cover a lot of different topics on that show. So, even for me as a dietitian, I found lots to listen to, on the show. So it's not strictly about agriculture, although that's kind of your space is horticulture and agriculture, right?
Yeah, it really is. But we touched on even immunotherapies for aggressive brain tumors.
Oh, okay.
So anytime that we can use biotechnology as a method to help us solve an important problem for people or our planet, that's where we like to go.
Well, before we get too far into our little interview today, tell everybody a little bit about who you are and your background and sort of why you're in the space of talking about agriculture, farming, and biotech.
Yeah, well, I'm a professor at the University of Florida, but I'm also a chairman of the department, which means I help coordinate research efforts and kind of oversee folks with their career progression who are working in the area of creating and producing the next generation of fruits and vegetables in the state of Florida. So that's what I do for my day job, but I'm also a researcher that uses genomics and other really cool tricks to answer questions about plant biology.
And you're just a very big advocate and of a leading voice, I would say, in terms of science communications. And that's something that's really important to you. No, I see a lot of times you trying to communicate that to students and other types of folks in the science space.
Well, yeah, that's a passion. You know, I mean, the other stuff, you know, my research gives me joy. My chair job gives me satisfaction. But really, my passion is sharing the science with other people. And maybe because for 12 years, I went out in science communication with the best of intentions, but only made the problem worse because I didn't do it effectively. And after I kind of learned a little bit more about people and learned how not to be just a scientist, but to be a better teacher, that's when things changed. And so I'm really excited to share that message now.
Yeah, as I was saying, folks, in the beginning of the this interview, is make sure you check out, if you're on Twitter and also on Facebook, you can find Dr. Kevin Folta on Twitter as Kevin Folta. It's spelled F-O-L-T-A on Twitter. And, you know, it's a big day for us here in the Asheville area, Kevin. We have a March for Science going on, and I believe there's marches all over the country, if not all over the world, going on today, right?
Yeah, it's a big day for at least for people who want to make a statement about the importance of science and the importance of us to be following evidence and using science as the best tool to help us uncover what reliable evidence is. So it's really a nice time for us to kind of coalesce around the idea of doing experiments to lead us to the truth. And I think if we can proceed in the science marches in that vein, it's a very good thing.
Yeah, I know in the Asheville area, there's a lot of groups that are supporting this. And I was really pleased to see that the Collider, which is a group here that is working on climate change issues, is supporting this event. And also our up-and-coming science museum, which is the acronym is AMOS, is supporting it. And there's also some physicians' offices that are tied in and supporting the March for Science. I think if you want to find a March for Science in your area, if you search on March for Science, most major cities in the United States are having a March for Science. So that's a really exciting way to maybe interact with and connect with more people who have the same goals and visions about science that you have in your community. Kevin, are you marching today?
Actually, I'm not going to be marching. It's kind of a funny idea. I support people doing it. It's great that people are willing to take a step to do it. But for me, I'm much more interested in, this isn't a sprint for me, this is a marathon.
Okay.
And for me, my interests are much more sustained, long-term goals. So I'm going to go put in an irrigation system at a middle school on my own dime. And the idea there is, long after the signs are, you know, in the dumpster and people have gone home, kids will be able to grow plants at their school. And I think that's going to be a much more sustained deliverable that is a way I can stand up for science better.
And I think that's a great point, Kevin, because not everybody wants to be a part of an event like that. Or, you know, some people, like personally, I don't like crowds, Kevin. I'm not a big crowd fan.
Yeah. So, I agree. I think being a face in the crowd is a good thing for many people. But for me, I think, you know, I stand up for science on a daily basis.
Yes, you do.
And for me, it is a critical part of who I am and what I do. And, you know, science, it's hard. What we need to do in science is earn trust. And do we earn trust by rallying together and screaming, trust us?
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And I think a lot of people who know me from my writing and on social media know that I also do quite a bit in this space to try and promote what I call hashtag facts, not fear, and stand for science about a lot of issues around food and nutrition and agriculture and farming. And it gets a little tricky sometimes, but you know, it's worth it when you have somebody come up and say, you know, I've learned something new today that I didn't know before. And thank you. So I'm sure that's a lot of your motivation too, right, Kevin?
It certainly is. And I think we've changed so many hearts and minds over the years just by being a trusted source of information. And that's where science really needs to go. We need to be communicating science in a way in which people want to hear it. We don't do that well as scientists. And if people don't trust science, it's because we haven't earned their trust.
Yeah.
And that's how we fix it.
Well, stay tuned to the Ingalls Information Aisle. I'm talking with Dr. Kevin Folta. We're talking about science. We're going to be also talking about how you can spot some of the signs of fear-mongering and what I'm calling shockumentary information. Stay tuned to the Ingalls Information Aisle. Welcome back to the Ingalls Information. This is Leah, your Ingalls dietitian, talking with Dr. Kevin Folta. He is at the University of Florida in their Horticultural Sciences Department. We've been talking a little bit about science communications, and Kevin's been saying that it's really important as science professionals, and I consider myself a science professional. My degree is in nutrition science, to help others sort of sort out the facts from the fiction and scared about our food. You know, Kevin, one of the things I said, I was talking at a conference to a group of dietitians, and I said, you know, we can't really talk about nutrition, the nutrition of food, until we can make people get rid of the fear they have about what's on their plate. And I feel really strongly about that there are a lot of entities these days, a lot of individuals who are, it seems to me, deliberately fear-mongering about food in order to sell something else, whether it's a certain brand or a certain type of method of farming or supplement or detox or cleanse. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I agree. I mean, it's really sad that we are going through a time where we live literally with the safest, most affordable food supply in human history. We've never had such diversity, so much choice, so much seasonal availability, and it really all boils down to beautiful improvements in genetics and refinement of our production techniques. we've gotten better at how we handle food and how we move it around and logistics, and everything through the supply chain is amazing. And at this time, you know, when we have plenty of food, there are folks who want to cash in. And what they can do is demonize that idea of constant availability and say this is unnatural and wrong. And then at the same time, use that as an opportunity to sell you a supplement or a cleanse or a book or a documentary. It's right. Really unfortunate.
Well, and I think speaking of documentaries, you know, there are so many documentaries that are out there these days that really paint our food system in a very negative light. And you kind of mentioned that. And, you know, everything from forks over knives, GMO, OMG. I mean, we can go on and on with all these documentaries, and they all seem to share certain commonalities where they talk about, quote unquote, a broken food system. They talk about industrial or big ag in a very negative and pejorative way. They talk about toxins and poisons in our food. And to me, it seems like this is not helping the situation at all. I mean, you know, I know one of the movies that's out, I call it a shockumentary that's out, that's just come out, and it was shown on PBS recently, was Seed. Have you seen that, or do you have any thoughts on that particular documentary?
Well, I started. The big issue is, you know, and it is interesting. If we had the bingo card, you know, guy in hazmat suit, you know.
Right. Right.
There's so many of the familiar tropes which are used over and over again that are used for one reason, and it's used to scare people about their food. And it's activist driven. It's people who have plenty of calories that feel that they have some sort of, you know, lifestyle angle that we all need to adopt. And I find it really offensive, because until everybody's fed using the best technology, let's not start dialing it backwards.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, a lot of times people don't stop it. They see these things and they're shown on public television and they think, oh, this is all factual. This has got to be true. And they don't really stop and think about maybe who's behind these documentaries, who's funding them, and what their ultimate goal or aim is. This particular one, Seed, when I started watching the trailer for it, and it had, you know, like you were saying, Kevin, it has all this, like, sort of a bingo card of, like, kind of sad, you know, sad, mournful music, you know, that, you know, paints this, like, oh my gosh, you know, that, because music can really set the stage for a lot of emotion. And it talks about the sort of the critical nature of seeds. And it's interesting because I had spoken to one of the leading tomato breeders in this area, Dr. Randy Gardner. And I think you may know Dr. Gardner or know of him, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this very issue about, you know, are there really fewer varieties of something like tomatoes? And he said, you know, no. He said, what happened is there's actually a lot more varieties now, but what people were calling one thing in South Carolina, they were calling something else in Tennessee. So we know from genetics now that those were the same plants. And have you seen that as well in your field?
Well, sure. I mean, that's part of it, is that there's, you know, they say, oh, that all the seeds are going extinct and are controlled by a few companies. You know, what it is it's like saying that since the beginning of computers, 99% of computers are in landfills and we need to be worried. What happened is that the old technology was replaced by better technology. And the seeds that used to give us corn at 15 bushels per acre, nobody uses, because hybrid corn that gives you hundreds of bushels per acre has become the norm. And so instead of celebrating the fact that the ancient ways have been replaced by technology, starting in the 1920s, by the way, instead of celebrating the technology, they look at it as a reason for concern.
Right.
That obviously these ancient, meaning back in the 1800s, varieties are no longer used. And that's not a surprise. That's progress. You know, exactly. We're moving in the right direction with our seed genetics. And as a consequence, the old stuff doesn't stick around.
Well, and you know, I think a lot of times too, they when they talk about seeds, they lump everything together in terms of like maybe row or production crops and specialty crops or things that maybe you could buy from Burpee Seeds for your backyard garden, and it's very different, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what's going on in production is amazing. And it's because we have genomics and genetics, these new tools that we can use to understand genes and genomes that allow us to be able to bring in more genetics and wider genetics, meaning crosses that we could never make before. That now we can make those crosses and add wild genes to familiar backgrounds. And this isn't genetic engineering or, you know, GMO as it's called. This is traditional breeding.
Stay tuned, folks. Kevin, I'm sorry to interrupt. We're going to pick this one up on our next segment here. Stay tuned to the Ingalls Information Aisle. Welcome back to the Ingalls Information Aisle. This is Leah McGrath, your Ingalls dietitian. I'm talking with Dr. Kevin Folta. We've been talking about sort of fear-mongering. And, you know, as consumers, as shoppers, we just really need to take things with a grain of salt and do some questioning. What's the motivation behind people who are trying to scare us about our food, our food supply and ingredients in food? And folks, when you hear people just, saying or writing words about food, like, and using things like the words toxins and poisons and cancer causing, you need to just take a deep breath and, you know, evaluate those things as to their truthfulness. Because most of the time, I would say 99% of the time, it's not true. And we've been talking with Kevin about a new movie, a documentary that's just come out called, it's called Seed. I believe it's Seed, the Untold Story or something like that. Right, Kevin?
I think that's right. Yeah, it was on PBS last night.
And, you know, it really paints a very sort of grim picture, in many ways about the state of seeds, around the world. And Kevin was talking before we came to break about it's very, you know, you can't really lump all seeds in together. You know, I'm not going to be planting BT corn in my backyard because, you know, that's not what I want. I want, you know, maybe I want cucumbers or I want tomatoes. And I'm not even going to plant certain varieties of tomatoes because maybe I want a type of tomato with a certain kind of skin or a certain kind of size. So can you talk a little bit more, Kevin, about the variety of different crops and seeds and how they're sort of segmented?
Oh, sure. And this is really important because we've seen so many changes in the last 100 years. And really what it's been driven by is what are the needs of the industries that create tomatoes or strawberries, blueberries, whatever, citrus, apples, you name it. And when we're talking about seed crops, things like tomatoes, peppers, the idea of genetic improvement has been to make bigger fruits, more yield that last longer and don't get disease. And plant breeders stepped up and did that. And so the plants that we have today are much different than they were a century ago. And lots more improvements going forward now in the sensory area. So lots of good things coming.
And when you say sensory, we're talking a lot of times about taste. I mean, that's one of the biggest things I know from talking to breeders. And these are just people who are doing traditional breeding. Is they're really wanting to get products that taste better for the retail customer, that's supermarkets like Ingles, as well as the restaurant customer for those chefs who want, you know, certain types of taste profiles for their dishes, right?
Oh, yeah. And that's all reality now. I mean, that's what we focus on and folks in our department and my department focus on. And so when people are talking about seed and that, you know, three companies own all the seeds and they're going to hold us all hostage, it's totally insane that, you know, they'll show these pictures of these seed vaults and say that the stuff is disappearing. There are beautiful repositories all over the United States and all over the planet that preserve the wild germplasm and preserve wild seeds and go out of their way spending lots of money to ensure that that stuff's there. And at the same time, efforts are going on to breed those into our popular cultivated varieties to bring in really good traits. So it's the movie like Seed casts such a dirty, negative cast on what is really a beautiful thing of improving fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, I think I think anybody who has talked to farmers, like our friend Jenny Schmidt out in Maryland, will tell you that they have so many different options in terms of seeds that they use, and they want to use ones that that produce the best yields for them. That's a commercial farmer in your backyard. Like for me, you know, I'll plant maybe a tomato one year, and if I don't like it, you know, I'm going to switch to a different type of tomato the next year. And there's so many varieties to choose from when you look in these catalogs or these online versions. Kevin, we have a few minutes left. I want to see if you can speak to consumers and customers and say, how do we tell if something's trying to scare us and is fear-mongering, or if there are things that we should be looking at and be really – what are the red flags of quackery?
Well, there's so many, but the ones that I always look for are, is someone trying to sell you something?
Ah.
And if somebody is trying to make a profit off of scaring you, that's usually the – because fear makes you take action. What is somebody's political motivation? And when I say political, I think around the politics of food. Are they somebody who has for a long time tried to change the way things are done, or has a bone to pick with a certain company? And that's out there too. And sometimes it's both. Sometimes there are people who get excessively wealthy off of scaring people about the things they eat. And that's a real good start.
And how about all these documentaries that are out? What advice would you have for people who maybe find out that this is being shown in their school, in their classroom, or whether it's middle school, high school, or college?
Oh, that's really important. The fact that Food Inc. or the Food Babe, you know, were shown at my university as information, quality information about food and farming, that made me go ballistic. I mean, here we have the world's experts in food and farming that were not consulted, yet others are coming in to show this kind of stuff. When you hear about that, it's imperative that you contact the school and that you talk about the importance of standing up for science. You know, on a day like today, standing up for science and talking about evidence-based information, not activist drivel. And we must take control of this.
And, you know, I think that's such an important point, Kevin. We're almost at the end of our segment here, but I think one of the things people think that they're doing by inviting people like that is to creating some sort of giving a balance. But if you have somebody speaking who doesn't have the scientific background or the credentials, you're not providing balance. You're just giving them an opportunity to promote their inaccurate messages and misinformation to more people. So I would echo what Kevin has said. If you hear about these things being promoted in your school or your child's school, then you need to take action and stand for science. Dr. Kevin Kapolta, thanks so much for joining us on the Ingalls Information Aisle. I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you, Leah. This was wonderful. Thank you.